Hello, I'm Adam, and this is the Animal Free Science Advocacy Podcast. Maddie Krasno holds a master's degree in humane education and has worked in animal protection for over a decade. During her undergraduate education, Maddie worked for 2 years at the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Harlow Primate Research Laboratory and was later diagnosed with PTSD as a result. Maddie, thanks for joining me.
Hey.
Tell me a little bit about Justify and your mission.
Justify is, it's kind of like this dream that came about, first of all, from former lab workers like myself, who decided that it would be really helpful for us to connect with other animal lab workers about our experiences, particularly because we, you know, the individuals that I connected with, being Mallory and Lindsay, the other co-founders, we all had feelings about animal research that, you know, went against, I guess, what the industry would want. We were questioning it. We were uncomfortable with what we had been a part of, experienced, that kind of thing. Granted, I will say that Lindsay's experience is a little different because Lindsay worked in animal research undercover. So her experience is slightly different than Mallory's or mine in the sense that it wasn't sort of just like a part of their career or life where they sort of just ended up there and then we were like, what are we doing? But with Lindsay kind of came up with the same sort of conclusions of, you know, recognizing how hard this was for the workers on the inside, really empathizing with their experience. And so that's kind of how Justify was born, is that we had all connected with each other. And it was really meaningful to be able to talk through this with people who understood and weren't judging us. We weren't judging each other. So Justify, you know, the whole idea behind it is that we are trying to provide support and resources to current and former animal lab workers and kind of create a platform to advocate for ethical scientific practices, promote the use and development of non-animal-based research methodologies. And we're really dedicated to fostering a community that supports each other while continuously learning and growing in ethical awareness and science scientific understanding. In other words, we just want to kind of create this space that, to our knowledge, hasn't really existed, where people who come out of the labs or may even still be in them and are kind of questioning what's going on, they have someone to turn to that is not in the industry, who's going to be trying to make them feel okay with what's going on or sort of be biased in that way. And also, you know, try to protect them from what can sometimes come from animal activists, which can be, you know, some pretty cruel things, just because, you know, it is such an emotionally, it's very kind of easy to understand how people can become upset about what's going on inside labs. I completely get that. I mean, especially someone who's been in there, but at the same time, I realize that if we really want to encourage others to think about, you know, what's going on there, especially the individuals who are inside there, and encourage them to change their mind, we need to welcome them to, you know, come out on the other side and not feel ostracized. So, you know, these are all of the different things we're sort of thinking about. The important thing is to keep in mind is that this is relatively new. It's only been like over a year, and the three of us are kind of doing this as like a side passion project on top of full-time jobs. But, you know, we're still planning. We're still kind of like figuring out where this is going to go and, you know, what's going to come of Justify.
So you've said that you stayed for 2 years at the University of Wisconsin because you fear that your replacement may be less caring of the primates than you were. How common is this as a reason for those working with animals to remain in their positions?
From those who I have spoken to at this point or kind of, yeah, conversed with, it seems to be very common, actually. I think, you know, there's this misunderstanding that everyone who gets involved in research has this, like, desire to be, you know, poking and prodding at animals. And actually, a lot of us, including myself, get involved in research because we know there's animals and we love animals. And, you know, this industry does a really good job of making everything seem really humane, you know, like they talk about all of these regulations and oversight committees, and you have this idea that this research saves lives and, you know, you'll be contributing to something good, but also it's okay because the animals, they don't go through anything too bad. And so, you know, when I went into the lab, I truly did not know what I was getting myself into. I loved primates. I wanted to get some like hands-on experience so I could follow in the steps of Jane Goodall and work in primate conservation. And, you know, it didn't take long for me to realize that sort of whatever vision I had of this or whatever understanding I did have of animal research was not what it seemed. And, you know, I think an important part of this too is I didn't see much of any actual research. I wasn't involved in research. My job was to take care of the 500 plus monkeys that were in this building that were being bred and used for research. So my perspective even just came from their daily monotonous lives. And my job was to take care of them.
Why is it important that we consider the well-being of those working with animals as we campaign to move away from using animals?
Yeah, so, I mean, this is, I think, very much at sort of the core of Justify, in that I genuinely believe that the people on the inside, the ones who have really been a part of the research industry, the ones who have seen it and know it, they can be our biggest allies in shifting, you know, towards non-animal research. Because, you know, again, I've mentioned this before, but the industry is really good at painting animal research, animal testing to look and feel very different than it actually is. And the problem is that if we are out here demonizing animal lab workers, especially, you know, the individuals like who would have been me, the people who are just in charge of caring for these animals, then we are discouraging them from coming forward and questioning what's going on. We're creating this us and them sort of scenario. And as a former lab worker, I can say, I wouldn't say that I identified as an animal rights activist until probably like, I don't know, a couple of years after leaving the lab, really. So I was an animal lover, but I was very much not an animal activist. I knew how the industry viewed animal activism. And that is something we are reminded of in the lab, you know, like, be careful, stay away from the activists, you know, like they're going to scream at you. And so, you know, this is what's also being fed. And so I think it's really important that we don't worsen our chances of helping these animals, because generally speaking, people want to talk to you if you're kind to them, right? Like, it's that simple. And if you're just like going up and being like, how could you do that? Someone's going to say, well, you know, how could you do that? Like, what's going on here? You're speaking to me like this. So it's really important that we recognize that we live in an imperfect world, that not everyone just wakes up and knows, oh my gosh, like I've just had so many people say to me like, well, I would have left the first day, or I would have just known that this was horrible. And it's like, well, I mean, good for you. That is great. But the reality is that there's people get involved in animal research oftentimes either because they love animals and want to take care of animals, or because they want to help humans. You know, there is this sort of altruistic idea to it, right? And so keeping that in mind is going to allow us to connect more with individuals and reach a point of sort of like, hey, well, are there better ways to help humans and not harm as many animals? So it's just, there's a lot to think about there, but ultimately I just So it's one of the things I do is try to really keep an eye on conversations and the discourse around people who work in labs, because I think the more we demonize them, the farther away we get from actually liberating animals and transforming science.
What personal strategies do people engage in to allow them to continue working with animals in laboratories?
Well, from personal experience, I can say that I very much was dissociating, which it wasn't actually a conscious thing at the time. I didn't even know what dissociation was. You know, when I worked in the lab, I was in my early 20s, so like 20, 21, 22. Very impressionable age, very much someone who just like obeyed authority, and even if I was sort of questioning things, was too afraid to say anything, which kind of played into like, how do I survive, right? And it was just kind of to, in a way, dissociate or like kind of remove myself from the situation somehow. And what that manifested in years later, which I, you know, came to understand as I learned more about PTSD, which I was diagnosed with, and like memory suppression, because what I actually ended up doing was blocking out a lot of my time there, which remains blocked out. There are definitely specific memories I have and things that I do remember, but for someone who was in a lab for 2 years, you would think that I would be able to come up with more, but I really blocked it out. I, as a college student, I was living what felt like two different lives.
How does framing the animals as heroes change how animal lab workers approach their work?
Talking about these animals as heroes is such an interesting, for lack of a better word, way to justify what is taking place. Because first of all, you're calling these individuals heroes and they never consented to what is taking place. It's like, yeah, you're such a hero, but you would actually choose to not be. Because who's going, like, these animals would not say, like, here, just use my body. Like, they are actively fighting back as much as they can, whether, you know, whether we're talking about a mice, a rabbit, a monkey. These animals are showing that they are fighting for themselves, even though, unfortunately, most of the time they don't stand much of a chance against humans. So, you know, the language itself is very misleading, because it just completely removes their, what should be their bodily autonomy and freedom from harm from the situation. But again, the industry is very compelling. And when people have these ideas that, you know, you just sacrifice X number of animals or, you know, use this many heroes, however you want to say it, to get this result and save however many humans, people hold on to that. And they believe it, because I think it's when it comes to science, there's the people who are totally anti-science, and then there's the people who are like, science is everything. And then there's the people who, like myself, are against animal research, against animal testing, but are considered to be anti-science because of that, which to me is absurd. But it's kind of, again, some of the propaganda that the industry tries to get across, that like, if you're against this, you must just be against progress. But their definition of progress is very different than my definition of progress. But again, it's just like the way we talk about these issues, the way we talk about the animals in the lab, the way we talk about the workers in the lab, it all matters. It all kind of shapes how we consider this industry and sort of the success of it, really, like how it's just been able to continue despite constant animal welfare violations, like here in the United States, you know, where it's just like a slap on the wrist, you owe us like the cost of one monkey, and then they kind of like move on. So
Some research institutes offer counselling or assistance programs to their employees. Have you had any experience with these programs?
So I have not. That kind of thing, as far as I know, was not offered during my time, which would have been 10 years ago now, believe it or not, when I worked in the primate lab. I have seen that it's becoming more common to sort of try to include like compassion fatigue training, recognizing that especially the caretakers, people like what I did, it can be really tough to be working in this environment, seeing animals in this situation, being a part of it, all of these animals dying and what that does to a person. So the industry has started to kind of incorporate some form of compassion fatigue training. I'm not sure how much that exists like across the board or anything, but in general, it's being talked about. I think the thing about it is, unless you are hiring completely unassociated, like non-biased facilitators, psychologists, what the industry is most likely doing is helping people still feel okay about their participation in animal research, regardless of what they might actually be thinking. You know, it's different than like going to a therapist and the therapist is going to be like, well, how do you feel about this? Like, do you like let you explore this? But, you know, the industry doesn't want to lose people, right? So there's like this balance taking place. And it reminds me of this article that was, I don't know, it was maybe like a year ago that this article came out. And the article was talking about, it was a science.org article, like Science Magazine. And the title of the article was "Suffering in Silence, Caring for Research Animals Can Take a Severe Mental Toll." And so, you know, this whole article is talking about basically what we're talking about, that it's really difficult for people to love animals and be caring for them in a situation where ultimately they're being used against their will and they're going to die. But my major critique of this article, even though it's like starting to get at this issue, and this is in quotes, it says, everyone science spoke to for this story who works with lab animals stressed that they are critical for biomedical research. So in other words, they were only speaking to people who still said animals are needed for research. And despite, you know, so many of us walking out and existing who decided something different. And so there's like already inherently in that article, this bias of you're not even letting the idea, you know, be a possibility that we, you know, people walk out of there traumatized themselves and also have changed their views about the necessity of animals for research.
What might you offer to someone who may have experienced trauma while working with animals in a laboratory?
Yeah, so, you know, that is one of the things that justifies an organization is kind of like starting to formulate and talk about. Like, we've been brainstorming ways of supporting people. I mean, one of the easiest sort of ways, simplest in if you're not considering like my personal time, for example, would be just like one-on-one speaking with someone. What gets trickier and is something that we're still thinking through is like, we don't really know how to like if we want to do like a group sort of meeting, like a Zoom meeting or something, like how do we properly vet people, make sure that people are who they say they are, that people feel safe talking to others and it's not someone from the industry saying like, oh, I'll just pretend to be this, because I wouldn't put it past them, right? This group, a group like Justify, again, I don't think has really existed before. And especially like with all of what I've done on social media in terms of speaking out about my experience and being in two active free speech lawsuits related to animal research, you know, I'm aware that there are some eyes and ears on me. And so, you know, safety is really a major concern that we are sorting through, especially because this is not like an official nonprofit organization. As I said, we're just three individuals who are doing this in our own time. It's meant to be more like a community than an organization per se. Who knows what the future will hold. But all that being said, it's a little tricky. So at this point, what we keep saying is like, we're here to talk. If you want to talk one-on-one, that's fine. We also do have a couple anonymous forms, or like someone can leave their name, but say like, don't share my name, that kind of thing. And that's actually how we've received some of the sort of stories from individuals who have been in labs, because they feel comfortable submitting it there and then saying like, whether or not they do give their name, they'll say like, you know, can you keep it anonymous? Or I don't care. I don't need to be anonymous. So this is kind of like an ongoing thing that we are deciding. I think one of the other things though we are looking at is going to be doing more sort of presentations or sort of like panel speaking things that people can access online. So they might be able to like hear from me and Lindsay and Mallory, and like, my hope is to get Dr. John Gluck on with us, and they can, you know, just hear us kind of speak with each other. And from there, you know, decide if they want to reach out further. So things like that for learning, for just kind of that feeling of you're not alone. And yeah, we're just sorting it out still.
Yeah. So would you say it's important for people to find their tribe, so to speak? So people who feel the same way that they do, even if they're remaining within the industry, but also seeking more professional help to deal with the connection and the mental issues as well?
Absolutely. I think it's important, sort of like, especially with any sort of animal protection issue, to understand that people don't usually change overnight, right? Like, they don't just suddenly go like, aha, and their lives completely do a 180. And so we aren't expecting, you know, that one of the things with Justify that's very interesting is the individuals that we connect with are all like very much along a spectrum of where they're at. You know, some may just be like, I really don't believe animals should be in labs or tested on, but we have no idea like how that doesn't mean that they're vegan. That doesn't mean that they're actively engaging in animal activism. You know, some people might say like, absolutely primates should not be tested on, but like, I'm not really sure how I feel about mice. And then, you know, there might be, and there are like actual other like vegan animal rights activists who are like, this is what made me into an activist. And we are really trying to create a space where it doesn't matter where you are on that spectrum. If you are coming from this industry in any way and are sort of just feeling like you don't have the right people to connect with because you might be questioning something one way or another, we are here. Because truthfully, I still wonder what would have happened if I had been in therapy then, if someone had just kind of turned to me and really said, like, how do you feel about this? Not like, how could you do this? Or, you know, like the sort of accusatory. It's like, how are you feeling about this? Like, what? Because one of the things that like a lot of, especially I think as a college student, people would be like, you're so lucky, you get to play with monkeys all day. And it was like, that's not my job. But at the same time, it was like, well, that was a lot easier to be like, ha ha, yeah, and move on, versus, you know, be like, well, actually, this is what their lives are like, and this is what happened last weekend. And so, yeah, I think if the more people are able to connect with individuals who are not judging them and who aren't going to be trying to push them to stay aligned with the industry, if that's not where they are, the more change that's going to take place and actually be better for humans and animals alike.
What action can those working with animals in science take to work towards removing them from harm? If you could go back there now and think, well, now with my knowledge, what could I do in this situation to help work towards removing them from this?
It's interesting for me to consider, like, okay, if I knew what I knew now and somehow I was back in the lab, what would I do? And, you know, this is part of, I think, where the PTSD comes into play, because one of the things with PTSD is recurrent nightmares. And I, for so long, and I still have these dreams, but they're much more sporadic, would dream that I was back in the lab and was trying to take photos, because I never took photos. I was afraid of authority, as I mentioned earlier. And so, like, I just had this idea that, like, there's probably cameras and they'll see me and then I'll get in trouble. And, like, getting in trouble was, like, the scariest idea to me. And so one of, like, my biggest regrets is just not better documenting what was going on. And at the same time, it's like, well, you weren't documenting what was going on because you were trying to forget it. As soon as you left the lab, you were walking into a different world because you didn't want to be thinking about this. And so it was a coping mechanism. It was a surviving, it was how I survived. So, you know, it's hard to sort of think about this idea of what would I do differently, especially knowing what I know now. Like, I wouldn't have been, I wouldn't be in there now. But at the same time, I understand why I was in there then. It's not like I wouldn't have been there now. And I, like, everyone should just know what I know, because, you know, people aren't going to know that. So I think it's tricky. I think that one of the things that I really feel strongly about is that there should be some sort of unaffiliated psychologists, therapists available that should be, especially for students working in universities, because again, we're talking about young, impressionable people not having any idea of how actually traumatic it is to be contributing to harm to living beings. I mean, at the very basis of animal research is using someone's body against their will. And that changes you. And so I just, for us to not view this work as inherently traumatic and to think about how it teaches people that some lives matter less, and how we don't think about the fact that then people can apply that not just to different species of animals or animals versus humans, but can also go on to apply that to different types of humans. This isn't that far off. And yet we act like there's, like, this cutoff where it's like, no, these are lab animals. And, you know, these are lab dogs. And this is the dog that's in my home, right? Like, it's so arbitrary. So this work needs to be treated as inherently traumatic. But if it were to be treated as inherently traumatic, well, how is that going to really look to the outside world, right? Like, then I think some of the curtain starts to go down, so to speak, or open up, whatever the phrase is I'm trying to come up with. Yeah, whatever a curtain does, maybe it just, like, flies open. I don't know. So, you know, I think about what it's like to sort of be 20 again and be back in this situation where, like this one weekend, two newborn monkeys had been recently born, but their mothers had rejected them. So we were hand feeding them, hand taking care of them, so to speak, until we could cross foster them to new moms. And that weekend, I came across one of them dead in an incubator. And the next day, the other one had a seizure and died in my hands. And, like, what that does to, you know, a young person, let alone someone who loves animals and got involved because they love monkeys. They want to, like, take care of them. And it's just, it's so traumatizing, you know? And I think that, unfortunately, we have become so desensitized as a society to harm in general, especially harm to animals, but harm in general. And again, I think they play off of each other because you can't draw a line between I'm desensitized to this harm, but not this harm. Like, it just sort of works together and you end up in a pretty troubling place, unfortunately. You know, I remember my boss at the lab, she was technically like the director of animal care. So again, not working in research per se, but like in charge of all of us who were in charge of taking care of the colony, so to speak. And I specifically remember her one day saying, you know, because there were a couple of these like the giant metal crates that sort of like there were just these tiny holes and you could tell that there were like monkeys in them, and they were up on like the people floor, the human floor, where they aren't usually. And she was saying that, she said something like, I hate these days because I don't know where they're going, you know, I don't know what's going to happen to them. Because we were a breeding facility, like there was research taking place, but they also bred monkeys and would send them to other labs. And so that was kind of like one of my memories of sort of like hearing this little bit of questioning, right? Like I recognize that I worry about what will happen to them there, even though, you know, I can tell you stories that would already make you say like, well, what's happening to them here, right? But yeah, it's interesting because again, you're battling sort of your own like empathy and questioning with trying to justify that this industry is really important and needs to continue to function the way it's been functioning. And I'm guessing this takes place more often than anyone thinks it does. But the more we create this us and them narrative and call people, you know, in these labs monsters, the worse it is for these animals, in my opinion, and the worse it is for human progress. I mean, this is the tangent that I cannot seem to stay off of anymore, is that when I started to look into how much money it goes into animal research. So for instance, here in the United States, you know, they say that around $21 billion from the NIH, the National Institute of Health, goes into funding animal research every year. And I'm just sitting here like $21 billion. Meanwhile, pretty much like I could just, you know, point to anyone I know and know that they're struggling to pay for their health insurance. They're struggling to access medications that already exist. They're struggling to justify paying for therapy, even though, you know, God knows we all need it. You see all of these unhoused individuals who need shelter, water, good food. Instead of using this money to get people the resources that already exist and radically change their lives today, we continue to funnel it into this idea of like this miraculous cure that probably won't even be accessible to anyone if it happens.
All right, I'll let you get back to your day. Thank you so much for chatting.
Of course, and yeah. We'll,
yeah, all right, take care. Thank you for all the work you do. Take care of yourself.
Of course, you too.
Yeah.
I will try.
All right. See ya.
Bye.